on correlation functions of Heisenberg spin chains.
Okay, so thank you very much for this invitation to the to this very nice and stimulating conference. I will not have really many things to say on the problem that most of the audience is interested in fact, about this ADS-CFT. And in fact, I realized that maybe the most interesting piece of work that could have been useful maybe to some people here were some 20 years old papers about complex Saint-Gordon or sigma models. But I'm not going to talk about that today, but of course I would be happy in private to answer any question on those. Okay, in fact, what I will try to describe today is some work that several people have been trying to do along the last, say, well, even more than 10 years, but about correlation functions. And as you will see, there have been quite a number of progress in this problem, but there is still a lot of open questions, and I'll try to show you what we think we can do and what we still don't know how to do. Okay, so as most of people here, I think, are convinced, quantum integrable models are quite interesting objects. First of all, they are indeed systems or models where we can compute exact results, which in general are not accessible by usual techniques, so this makes them very interesting. But in addition to that, they have quite now different applications, like in condensed matter or solid-state physics, and it seems maybe in string theory. They are also very beautiful from mathematical side. They were at the root of the quantum group theory, for example. They have been very useful in topology of low-dimensional manifolds, like knot theory, and so on. So the things we can compute in such models, and going back to the works of Bethe and Zager and many others, are things like Hamiltonian spectrums, scattering matrix, partition functions, some critical exponents. And for a long time, one of the main objects, if you want to apply such models to real system like in condensed matter, namely correlation functions that are really, for example, for two-point function measurable quantities, for example, by neutron scattering experiments, were very difficult to obtain. And in fact, up to now, although, as I said just before, we have been doing several interesting progress towards the solution of computing correlation functions, there is still some mysterious and unsolved problems. So since we don't know the general theory of computing correlation functions, let me just stick to some a priori simple but representative example of the class of quantum integrable models, namely the spin 1/2 XXZ Heisenberg chain. So this model is quite nice in the sense that, in some sense, it is simple enough. You have just a nearest neighbor interaction on a one-dimensional ring, eventually with a magnetic field here acting in the Z direction, and some anisotropy delta. So for delta equals 1, you recover the XXX chain that most of you are familiar with now. And in fact, this model is, in some sense, simple enough, but also representative enough to be some sort of archetype of quantum integrable models. Although we'll hear in the next talk that there is more sophisticated examples, like Hubbard model, where we have some other interesting effects arising. Okay, and so what has been computed for this model is, first of all, the spectrum. Well, first, Bethe ansatz was designed for the XXA chain by Bethe, And then there was a lot of people working and improving this method along the years. And in the end of 70s, a new method arises called algebraic betterment. That's by the Leningrad group. And I will talk a bit more about that later. As for correlation functions, the problem turns out to be quite difficult. And for a long time, it was restricted to the free fermion point, namely the point where delta here is zero. In this point, the theory is essentially equivalent to free fermion theory. But still, it required quite many years to solve the problem in that case. For general anisotropy, the first really interesting results were obtained as multiple integral representations, first by Jimbo Miwa, first in 92, 93 for the massive regime, and then in 96 for the disordered regime, where delta is between 1 and minus 1. And this was obtained for the infinite chain, using essentially Q-deformed version of Knishnik-Zamolodchikov equations and representation theory of Q-deformed vertex operators associated to the SL2 hat algebra, quantum algebra. Then in 99, together with two of my PhD students, we succeeded to obtain the same multiple integral representations, but this time from starting from the finite chain using algebraic betterment, that's solving in particular the quantum inverse scattering problem in that case, and I'll try to explain a little bit more about that. And then several group of people have been working and continuing to work nowadays on this problem, and there was some nice developments, in particular about temperature correlation functions by Gehmann, Klumper, and collaborators, and also more recently by Jimbo, Miwa, Smirnov, and collaborators using, again, QKZ equation, and I will comment on that a bit later also, and by us using still algebraic betterment, that's some techniques I will try to give at least some flavor of. So let me explain in, I hope, very simple words, why 75 years after betterment that we are still trying to do it, and why there is still open problems in this computation of correlation functions. Well, let me stick to zero temperature here in my talk. And in that case, essentially, the ground state contributes. And say if you want to compute correlation function of two operators, theta 1, theta 2 here, what you have to compute is just their average value in the ground state. So, of course, first you should be able to determine the ground state. And this is essentially betterment, that's algebraic betterment, that's technique. But you see that essentially what you can imagine to compute such an average value are, you can imagine of two essentially interesting ways. First way, you just try to compute the action of your local operators, for example, on the ground state, so and you get another state, say omega tilde. And then if you know first how to obtain this omega tilde, and if you know how to take the scalar product on the ground state back, then you can compute the correlation function. So this is one way. Another way would be to introduce a complete set of states between theta 1 and theta 2, and then to sum up over this complete set of intermediate states. For example, those states could be simply the eigenstate of your Hamiltonian. So, for example, if you are looking at dynamical correlation functions, the Hamiltonian will show up in between here. And so if you sum up over eigenstates, you can obtain the time dependency here immediately. But then, of course, you have to sum up these expressions. And anyway, you have to evaluate the average value of a single operator between two eigenstates, say, a ground state and excited state of the system. So this is form factor type expansion in this context. So why one or this way are, in general, difficult to handle? Well, in fact, one of the reasons is the following, that if you consider the spin chain in the antiferromagnetic regime, the ground state is a fairly complicated state. So it's a state where half of the spin are turned down, for example, and half of the spin are turned up. And if you look at this state from the point of view of local operators, it's a very highly non-local state. So it's a huge sum of many possibilities to turn half the spin down. And in general, what you are interested in correlation function are, for example, correlation functions of local operators. So what you are trying to do here is to mix some state that you can create by highly non-local operators, as I will show in a moment, with local operators, theta 1, theta 2. And this makes the problem very difficult. So let me be a bit more precise now and try to explain in one page what algebraic vectors that is. Okay, so you see, you face a problem to compute the eigenstates of this Hamiltonian. So in each side of the lattice, you have a two-dimensional space. So the total space of the chain is 2 to the power m, where m is the number of sides. So it's quite huge space. And in general, you will be interested ultimately in sending m to infinity, for example, to take the thermodynamical limit. So algebraic Betta-Ansatz is a way to solve this problem, to diagonalize the Hamiltonian. And the way to do it is you can think about it as just a map, a very nice map, from local operators to highly non-local ones contained in the so-called monodromy matrix, T. T is just a 2x2 matrix of A, B, C, and D, where A, B, C, and D are operators acting in the quantum space of your chain on this 2 to the power m dimensional space. And the fact that those operators and this map is useful is just that, first of all, those operators are satisfying very nice algebra, so-called Young-Baxter algebra, which is written here. And moreover, if you consider the trace of this 2x2 matrix, so the sum of the operator A plus D, they commute for arbitrary values of the parameters, lambda, which is, say, complex parameter, continuous parameter. And moreover, the Hamiltonian of the chain is a member of this commuting family. So by building up this map, you are constructing the set of conserved quantities, okay, that can be diagonalized simultaneously with your Hamiltonian. So this set of conserved quantities, in some sense, you can think of them as symmetries of your problem. So the way it is constructed is the following. You take 2x2 matrices L here. So each of these matrices is acting non-trivially in one of the sites of the chain, so site 1 to site, here, n. Sorry, I changed notation from m to n here. So you have a product of such 2x2 objects, and each of these L here contains the spin operators in one site of the chain, so site 1 here to site n here. Lambda is a complex parameter, and xi here are inhomogeneity parameters that you can put at each side of the chain. So in the end, when you want to recover the XXD Hamiltonian, you put all inhomogeneities to zero, but in fact, for practical computations and also for very nice algebraic purposes, it's nice to have those size in from the beginning. So if you look, for example, at operator B here, okay, I did not write the L here, but if you look at operator B, you can look at it, and it is a huge sum of 2 to the power n minus 1 terms. Okay, so it's a huge sum in terms of local operators. And each of member of this sum, of this huge sum, is a product of sigma operator, of Pauli matrices, all along the chain. So it's quite highly non-local objects. Nevertheless, what happens is that this highly non-local operator is able to create the eigenstates of your chain. And this you can just prove using the commutation relations, the quadratic commutation relation among the ABCD operators. And if you look at the construction of eigenstates, not only of the Hamiltonian, but all the conserved quantities, the A plus D operators, depending on lambda, then you can construct common set of eigenstates of T of mu, say, for arbitrary mu, just that way. And the only requirement is that lambda k should be solution of beta equations. And here, zero is a so-called reference state, which in the case of the XXZ chain is just the state where all spin are up. So, well, this is very quick description of beta ansatz. Of course, there is much more to say, but at least I hope you get the scheme. So the main point to remember is that you build up this map, and using this map, you create new operators, you create a new algebra, which is this Young-Baxter algebra, and using this algebra, you can construct eigenstates of your Hamiltonian. But as I said, now, if you're interested in computing correlation functions, now you face a problem that you created your eigenstates, and in particular your ground state of the system, using these highly non-local operators B. But what you are interested in is to act on such product of B operator with the local fields. And if you look at B, as I said, as a huge sum of local or of terms, each terms being some product all along the chain of Pauli matrices, then you realize that acting with a local field sigma on such a state is a very difficult question. So sigmas, of course, obey nice algebra among themselves. ABCDs, they obey a nice algebra, which is this Young-Baxter algebra. But the question is how to mix them. So one way to solve this problem is to be able to solve the inverse map. So to be able to reconstruct the sigma in terms of T. And this is a so-called quantum inverse scattering problem. And in fact, the fact that we were not knowing for a long time this inverse map for the quantum case was, well, one of the main obstacles to compute correlation functions. So what we succeeded to do in 1999 with Kitanin and Terras was just to be able to compute back the local operators in terms of the Young-Baxter operators A, B, C, and D. So let me explain here. So you see, for example, sigma minus at side J is reconstructed essentially by the B operator. However, dressed by product of T, where T are the transfer matrices. They are the A plus D operators. So you have T on one side and T inverse on the other side and product of them. If you wish, this adjoint action of T's is just the shift operator to transport your sigma from site 1 to site J. So if you look at the J equals 1 here, there is not this term, and there is only one A plus D inverse on this side. So it's just B divided times A plus D inverse of Xi 1, and here the same Xi 1. But if you want to reconstruct it at side J, you just need to act with the shift operators on both sides. So Xi's are the inhomogeneities, so this formula is valid for arbitrary Xi's, which means that there is huge cancellations among this, in this expression somehow to reconstruct. All these are highly non-local objects in principle, but they succeed to reconstruct completely local one. Okay? And, of course, if you go to the homogeneous chain, which is the XX, true XXZ chain, you just put the size to zero. So this formula is valid for all this size. So this is a very nice reconstruction. And you see, sigma minus is given by B, sigma plus by C, sigma Z by A minus D. So it's just you take just the proper combination in the monodromy matrix to obtain the local fields. And then you see that if you use a Young-Baxter algebra of ABCD operators that is known, you can get the action of any of these local fields on any state that you can construct by beta ansatz. Okay. For example, if you act with A on such a product of C's acting on zero on the reference state, well, it's still a combination of the same type of states, but with different lambdas. Okay, so this is one part of the problem, namely how to act with local operators on states, on beta states. Then, of course, you have to be able to compute the scalar product, as I said. So, maybe I should. Okay? So, if you are in the strategy, in the first strategy, you have to act with your operators on omega to compute some new state, and then you have to take back the scalar product. So you need to be able to compute scalar products to continue along this line. And scalar products can also be computed in quite general settings, namely if you have a state here which is an eigenstate, so where lambda are solution of beta equations, and if here you have an arbitrary state created by arbitrary parameter mu, not a solution of any equation, then you can compute such a scalar product as a ratio of two determinants, and the two determinants are determinants of matrices U and V, which are depending on the parameter, explicitly depending on parameters mu and lambda. In particular, for the XXZ chain, V is very simple Cauchy determinant, while U is some Jacobian in some sense, so it is just the derivative with respect to lambda A of the eigenvalue of the transfer matrix evaluated in UB and depending on all lambda k. So it's quite simple object. And of course, this function is explicitly known in terms of mu and lambdas. So this formula was first derived by Nikita Slavnov, and then you can prove it by different means that I don't want to explain now. But the message is that together with a known action of local operators, then you can really attack the problem of correlation functions. So let me explain how it works in a very simple case, which is one-point function. So let's consider one-point function. And in fact, let's consider the matrix elements of this local operator sigma between two eigenstates of, so two beta eigenstates, and see how you can proceed. So let me consider two beta eigenstates parameterized by mu and lambdas, where mu and lambdas are solution of beta equations. Okay, and there you just insert one local operator, sigma z at site n. So using the quantum inverse problem solution, you can replace this sigma z just as a minus d, as I said before, dressed by this product of transfer matrices. But beta eigenstates, they are just eigenstates of the transfer matrix for arbitrary value of the parameter here. So you can act with this product to the left. It gives some function of xi and mu. You can act with this product to the right. It gives again some numerical, purely numerical function, eigenvalues, product of eigenvalues, depending on lambda and xi. So what you obtain is that one-point function, or better to say matrix element of your local sigma z operator at site n, is just given by some numerical factor due to the action of these transfer matrices times the average value just of A minus D, just one single monodromy matrix, combination of monodromy matrix element between two beta eigenstates. And this you know how to do. You just, for example, act to the left with A and D. You obtain a combination of, again, states of the same kind. And then you see, but of course, because you act with A and D on this product, you change some parameter mu by xi. You change at least one mu by xi in some, and so you have a sum. But then this state is untouched, so it's still an eigenstate. And you know how to compute the scalar resultant scalar products. And what you obtain doing this way is just some explicit determinant representation of this matrix element. So in the end, you have computed your one-point function just as explicit determinant. And this determinant is just a function of mu and lambda. So some sinh functions, product of sinh functions of mu and lambdas. So if you know explicitly the parameters mu and lambdas, you can just plug them in the formula and compute your matrix element. So what about more general correlation functions? So if you consider elementary blocks, so what are elementary blocks of correlation functions? Consider elementary operators in each site, so elementary matrices. So since we are in spin 1/2 representations, there are just 2x2 matrices here. So you have 4 of them. Okay, so with a 1 somewhere and 0 in the 3 other places, and take product of such local objects from site J to site M. Obviously, this is the basis of all correlation functions. So how to compute this? Well, just similarly as I described for the one-point function, but of course here it's a bit more technical, you act recursively with first you replace the product of EJ by product of corresponding matrix elements of the monodromy matrix, which are these ABCD operators using the inverse problem. Then you act with these products of ABCD operators, for example, to the left on the ground state, psi J. And then you take back the scalar product. Of course, if you are interested in the thermodynamical limit, then you have to take the infinite lattice limit. Okay, I'm, of course, very sketchy here, but essentially, when you act with any A, B, C, or D on this beta eigenstate, for example, ground state here, you get sums of states. In the thermodynamical limit, these sums will become integrals. And so that's why, finally, if you look at the thermodynamical limit expression of correlation function, you obtain for these elementary blocks, for arbitrary elementary blocks, some multiple integral. So it's m-fold integral on some contours. The contours here are depending on the regime, so namely the value of delta. They are depending also on the magnetic field, H. And then you have two parts in the integrand. There is one part, omega m, which is a purely algebraic object. Namely, it does not depend on the regime. It does not depend on the magnetic field. It depends only on the commutation relation of your operator. So it depends only on the quantum R matrix. So this can be computed as a function of lambdas and epsilon prime, which are just parametrizing which elementary block you are computing here. And then there is another part which is depending on the magnetic field and which is depending strongly on the regime, because this part is just some determinant of size M which contains a density function describing the ground state of the system. And this density function, they are solution of linear integral equations. These linear integral equations are explicitly solvable at h equals 0. And then you can, for h non-zero, you can evaluate them in various limits. So this gives a multiple integral representation of your correlation functions. I will give some explicit example in a moment. And very nice surprise was that we got them from, you see, starting from finite lattice, using this inverse problem and so on, just taking honestly the Hamiltonian and trying to compute from the beginning all this. And this expression for h equals 0, they were just giving the results and conjecture of Jinbo and Miwa and collaborators obtained from Q-vertex operators and various assumptions on the ground state and so on for the infinite chain. So it's rather nice. And in particular, this result, together with the Jinbo-Miwa approach, gives a complete proof that indeed, since they obtained the same answer starting from Q-deformed Knishnik homology of equations, that indeed the correlation functions of the chain in the case of zero magnetic field, indeed they satisfy those equations. So it's quite interesting because then there is we have now really two ways to look at this problem. One from really Q-deformed Knishnik homology of equations that we know are satisfied for sure now, and the other way by just algebraic beta ansatz, and which of course is valid even in the case of magnetic field and even when you look at temperature case and so on. Okay, so let me comment now. Well, I'm running out of time already, or no? 10 minutes?
15.
Okay. So let me comment about this result. So a priori, you could have the impression that the problem is solved, but in fact, it's not completely solved. Why? Because first, of course, you should think this, because you have an expression for all elementary blocks, and any correlation function is the sum of such elementary blocks. So in principle, you have solved the problem completely. Well, but from a practical point of view, there is two main problems. First, if you look at physical correlation functions, like two-point functions for sigma, for example, sigma z at site 1, sigma z at site m, you need to sum up a large number of such elementary blocks. Essentially, it's growing like 2 to the power of the distance. So this is a problem, because since you are, for example, interested in asymptotic behavior of this correlation function, it needs absolutely important resummations to be able to compute such a thing. And the next problem, which is not small, is that each block has a complicated expression. It is a multiple integral. So let me consider, for example, one of the most elementary block, which is this tau of m, which is a product of 1 minus sigma z over 2 in the ground state. So this is essentially the probability to create a ferromagnetic substring in your lattice in the antiferro ground state. So it should be a very quickly decreasing function of m. But how to extract the dependency on m from such multiple integrals? So you see from mathematical side, it's a highly non-trivial problem, because you are trying to make asymptotic analysis of an expression which is an integral, an m-fold integral, where m is going to be to go to infinity, and also the integrand is depending on m. So all this makes the analysis, the practical evaluation of this correlation function, not so easy. And so new tools are needed. Well, so probably I will not be able to describe many of them. But here there is essentially two directions, as I said. One direction, which I will not describe, is a direction which is now taken by Jimbo, Miwan, Smirnov, and collaborators to go back to QKZ equation and try to obtain different representation of solution of these QKZ equations such that you will not have to evaluate multiple integrals, but that will give rise probably to huge combinatorial sums in the end. So this is one way. And the other way is to try, as I just mentioned here, to try to make resummations and various other manipulation on this multiple integral to try to evaluate them. So in some cases, so this is what I want to describe now quickly, in fact. So one, so let me go back to this tau of m that I just mentioned. So it's this huge multiple integral with some complicated integrand. Zm is a partition function of six vertex model with domain wall boundary condition. It can be expressed as a determinant. Here you have another determinant, and here you see you have a bunch of product of sinh function. And what makes life very difficult is that you see that you are integrating over m lambdas here, and in denominator here you have couplings of all lambda a to all lambda to all a to all b. So you have highly coupled multiple integral, and it's not at all evident how to disentangle these couplings. So at this stage you have two attitudes. One attitude could be to to try to separate the integrals to the end. And in fact, this is also a way which is considered by, was considered by both Korepin and then Takahashi, Suzuki, and many other people. But our tendency was not to do that. It was, and if you do this procedure, then you desymmetrize maximally the integrant in some way. So the way we chose was completely different. It was to symmetrize maximally the integrant. And if you try to symmetrize maximally the integrant, there is some nice, even more determinants arising in the multiple integral. And for example, for special case of anisotropy delta equals 1/2, which has many interesting combinatorics properties, and there was quite a lot of works for this case. Well, by symmetrizing completely the integrant, you are able to compute it completely. So you can compute the integrals. You can separate them in the determinants. Essentially, you get a multiple integral of a single determinant where the lines are separated in lambdas. So you can just compute them. So this gives a nice, very nice answer, but just for this case or for this special correlation function. And anyway, this was the first exact answer out of the point, a free fermion point. So it's very interesting anyway. And you can also try to make asymptotic analysis, and we are able to obtain, both in massless and massive case, so when delta is between -1 and 1, or delta is greater than 1, asymptotic, main asymptotic behavior of this tau of m. So this tau of m is a decreasing function like exponent of alpha m squared, and the coefficient alpha is just given here. So, okay, so what about more general cases like two-point function? Well, for two-point function, as I said, you need resummations. So one possibility to resum is to go to a quite symmetric object. So let me consider the two-point function sigma z, sigma z. You can build up a generating function for the sigma z, sigma z correlation function in terms of what we call generating function Q here. So it's essentially the product of A plus kappa D, where kappa is some parameter, times A plus D inverse. So it's quite symmetric object because A plus kappa D for arbitrary parameters are commuting among themselves. So it's quite symmetric object, and which is nice to study. And by making second derivative of it, you obtain the two-point function. So I have obviously no time to describe how to sum this in practice, but let me jump through transparencies and go directly to the answer. So one possible summation is a complete... You remember that because of these elementary blocks, you would have a sum of 2 to the power of the distance number of terms in such an object. Well, what we were able to do is to resum it completely in terms of a single multiple contour integral. And this is quite interesting expression, because if you look at this multiple contour integral, it has a quite complicated integrant, but the properties of the integrant are very interesting. Namely, you have two ways to evaluate such a contour integral, either by the poles inside or by the poles outside the contour. In particular, the integrant is a periodical function of all the variables here with period I pi. So you can just restrict to the strip of with I pi and look for the poles inside the contour and the pole outside. If you evaluate this contour integral by the pole inside, you will obtain multiple integral representation for the correlation functions. If you evaluate this contour integral by the pole outside, then you will obtain the representation of the correlation function as a sum of form factors. So this resummation is quite nice in the sense that multiple integral representation, you can think about them as short distance representation of the correlation function. You act with operators on the states. Whereas when you evaluate Bayesian outside the control, you get the sum of form factors that you can think about as long distance evaluation of correlation function. So this formula is quite useful, and and it produces various interesting series and expressions for the correlation functions that we think now will lead to the at least to the asymptotic to the computation of asymptotic behavior of two-point functions. And this is some work in progress, and but obviously I don't have time to do this. There is a case where this resummation produces very nice result. It's again for this delta equals 1/2 case. So in this case, you can compute to the end all the integrals arising in this generating function, which again I should say by just derivative with respect to m and kappa gives a two-point function. So this is an explicit combinatorial sums that you obtain after computing all integrals for arbitrary distance m. And then you can compute explicitly for starting from distance 1, 2, and so on, you can compute explicitly just this function q kappa of m. And by just taking second derivative of it, you obtain explicit answer for the two-point function. So here are some examples up to distance 9. Well, there is various interesting aspects of these polynomials here. In particular, they have integer coefficients, which is absolutely non-trivial, and we have no proof that it should be like this. But again, this should be a feature, quite interesting feature of the combinatorics under the point delta equals 1/2. And one comment about this, which is interesting, is that because we have computed exactly, we can compare with asymptotic estimates of such correlation functions from conformal field theory plus form factors, guess or evaluations. And you see that starting at distance 5 on the lattice, you are pretty close to the asymptotic regime for the correlation function, which is quite interesting.
The length of the chain is not...
Here, the length of the chain is infinite. This is thermodynamical limit. Okay, and let me finish on something that is still going on, which is numerical methods for dynamical correlation functions. So why numerical? Because, as I said, you have two ways to evaluate, and from the master equation, you see that you can also connect to the just expansion over form factors. And when you look at form factors, you could think that since you have analytical expression for the determinant expression for the form factors, one thing you could try is to sum up the series. Of course, we don't know up to now how to sum up really analytically to obtain function depending on m, on the distance, and on time. But you can think about doing it numerically. So you have an exact expression, a huge sum, and you can think that maybe you can compute each term numerically and then sum up and see what you get. And you have even some constraints on the numerics, is that if you can decompose just one by the form factor, one is sigma z squared, then you can introduce complete set of states, and you have a sum over all sigma z form factors. And if you picked just few of them, you can see you can just test if you are close enough to one to test if your method is good. And in fact, doing that, you are able, for example, for chains of rather long, like 500 sites, which is out of reach of exact diagonalization techniques or even Monte Carlo and so on for the time-dependent case, you can reach precision like 99.99%. So from practical point of view, for experimentalists, it's very interesting if you can compute this. So this is what we did, and maybe I will finish on that because I'm about out of time. Recently, we sent our evaluation to an experimentalist here in Berlin, Alan Tennant, maybe some of you know him. And he sent us back our curves that we obtained by Betterandsatz and evaluation of this form factor series, side to side with his neutron scattering experiments on some compound, which is KCUF3, which is well described by XXX chain. So let me just tease a little bit string theorists to show you some explicit physical realization of such models. Okay. So this is the SQ and omega is a Fourier transform with respect to distance and time of the two-point correlation function for XXX chain, evaluated numerically for a chain of 400 sites with a saturation of the sum rule, which is 99 point something, okay, percent. So this is the result of our Betterandsatz computation. So this is so-called dynamical structure factor. And this is the neutron scattering result for this compound. So let me explain. So here you have momentum, here you have energy, and the colors here are just the height of the function. Okay? So when it is dark brown, it's very high contribution. When it is blue, it's close to zero, and so on. So you see the main contribution, and this envelope here is just the envelope where you have the value of Q and omega for which you have eigenstates of your Hamiltonian. Okay? And so this is the experimental curve, and you see that, well, even the grading of colors, although you have, of course, some noise and so on in the experiment, is quite pretty much the same as from the exact numerical evaluation. Okay, so let me just conclude that there is few techniques that we have been trying to develop, and some of them can be used really even for practical use. We have still a lot of things that we don't know how to do. For example, Hubbard model is still not contained in such techniques, and we would like to do it. We are still not able to do field theory cases, but this is something, some project also. And there is progress for temperature case, for case with non-trivial boundaries, and so on. And I have to advertise that there is not so many people working on this subject in the world. We are, I don't know, 20 or 30 people only. But there is many interesting problems in this field. And, well, let's hope that maybe it will be helpful for in the future for string theory. Thank you very much.
Thank you for this very nice talk. Have any questions? I have a question. So for applications in this ADS CFT business, the XXX chain is the most interesting one. If you concentrate on arbitrary parameter delta, but we would be interested in deltas equal 1. Do these some of these formulas at least simplify in the XXX limit?
I don't think it's simpler in the XXX case. But, what I described is valid for also the delta equals 1, so for the XXX model. I mean, it's just a special point. Of course, the behavior of two-point function will be slightly different in that case. As you know, there is some log behavior divided by distance. But a priori, the same technique will apply to XXX as well. In fact, all these techniques, both QKZ and algebraic Betterandsatz, a priori, you can use them on the whole range of delta, starting from minus 1 to infinity. So all these results can be considered either for the disordered regime, so it's massless case, between delta between minus 1 and 1, so including XXX, and also for delta greater than 1, which is a massive regime, where you have a gap in spectrum and so on. But
it's not simpler.
But of course, for If you would give me specific correlation function that you are interested in, then, or I don't know, matrix element of local operators, or, it would, then we should look. I mean, as I said, we don't know everything in this. We have made some progress, there are some representations. Maybe there are things that can be computed explicitly. Maybe there is other things that we are on the way to compute. So this is a matter of looking precisely of what you would need for the ADS-CFT correspondence.
Maybe I have a comment, another answer to your question. I think this depends on the method. In Jimbo's method, where he goes back to the QKZ equation, there is indeed a serious or severe simplification in the sense that you have only one transcendental function in the XXX case that determines all correlation functions in the inhomogeneous case. XXZ you have two, XYZ you have three. In this sense, you have something more simple.
Yeah, but the question is, as I said, when you isolate in these two methods, anyway, at some point, if you want really to compute spin-spin, for example, you face huge, either huge combinatorial sums or huge other quantity to evaluate. And then the question, if you want really to put numbers, explicit numbers, then there is some... I think it's work in progress on... by both methods, and I hope we some way will succeed.
Any more questions?
I heard that there were some recent advances by Miwa, Jimbo, and Smirnov in finding some free fermion representation of this correlation function. Could you comment on it, since I haven't learned, haven't?
I just commented now. So this is exactly what we were discussing about. That there is a different representation, which is starting from QKZ to obtain some algebraic representation of the solution of QKZ equation. And the question is whether those expressions will be efficient to evaluate, for example, two-point functions. And okay, what is interesting is that. We have now several ways to look at it, and this is one of the way. And I very much hope that one of the way will be successful to reach the full answer to the problem. What I think is that from the way you mentioned, what you obtain finally is some huge combinatorial sums for this description of elementary blocks first that you have to sum up to obtain spin-spin correlation functions. As I showed in the delta equals 1/2 case, by the multiple integral approach, you can compute the integrals to the end, which means that you can look at it as a huge sum, but this sum, you can evaluate for small distances. But if you look at the sum itself, you cannot extract the asymptotic behavior just looking at this combinatorial sum. So, okay, I think it's work in progress, and as I said, not so many people are working in this field, so okay. Energetic young people or others could join.
You may also make a comment on that. The problem with this new paper is that the free fermion representation the operators are not being fermions, they depend on the parameter. And they also, they just constructed the annihilation operators. Not yet the creation operator. So it is a very promising approach, but it is not clear that it will be, enough for really calculating the asymptotics. We just hope that it can be done.
Okay, so let's thank Jean-Michel again. There are some comments for the